Hakuna Matata. It's our problem free philosophy. Hakuna Matata. Good enough? Should have thought that out before. I was even talking about it on the weekend and completely blanked out on it.
No, man, that's more than enough, AJ. Thanks so much, man. We're opening up the show. I like that.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that one in a while. I don't think I've... I think only other one other person's done it.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I don't think anybody else has done it, right?
So yeah, 500-something podcast. I couldn't
get... There's been a few shows.
I haven't been able to get through them all, but...
No, yeah. No, that's... Well, the library's there. Anybody who wants it, it's there.
See, I'm a scroller. Like, after being a few years in business, I scroll back to them, and, like, I have my, like, 10 podcasts alike, and I try to find, like, episodes that kind of...
How far back do you go?
I'll go to one.
Really?
I'll go right to one. If it resonates me with that season in business or construction, I'll scroll back to it.
I never understood podcasts that did seasons. Like season number two. Season
I'm talking about me personally, what season I'm in, right? Okay, so like, you know, you go through the journey of like, you know, grinding out on the tools. It's like, I need that blue collar guy. Yeah, I need, you know, rough and tough around the edges kind of guy. And then I'll find those episodes. And then you kind of say, hey, I hired my first guy. Let me find some episodes about hiring people. And then, you know, bringing in like, you know, fractional CFO or bringing in a marketing agency. And you kind of, I just listen to what resonates me to me at the time, right?
That's how it works, man. So I think we're doing something right. It connects with some tradespeople, so it works really well.
It's free info, man. People don't realize how much is on the internet. Like,
it's there.
You don't need to go to school. Like, you know, you don't have to figure it out as you go, like fast track.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that, man.
You want to know where a path goes? Like, ask the person on the way back.
You were saying just before we were coming down here, we were saying like you've been on a lot of shows, like twice a week. You get on people.
Well, once a week at least. Yeah. I try to get on a podcast.
Different variety of different shows.
Yeah. A variety of shows and stuff like that. But usually they're all like entrepreneurial kind of shows and kind of like business owners and, you know, that kind of like self-development. I'm in that season right now where it's like really concentrating on myself and who's around me, what I'm giving back to people. So yeah, nice. I find a lot of podcasts like that. So, yeah.
Nice. Let me share the deets. AJ Capucciti.
Close enough. Yeah.
No. How is it?
Capucciti. Yeah.
Italian?
Yeah.
From where?
Soda.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. AC Custom. Website is www.accustom.ca. And then also is the IG. You can find them at AC Custom Reno Inc. I'm wearing MP Precast Concrete. I've been trying to get these guys on the show because I respect what they do and the products that they create. And I'm a fan of it because it's actually real product. It's not a finish or a faux finish or whatever it is, right? And it looks great. So that's that. Do you dread the office? Are you spending your personal time on paperwork? Join the club. The good news is there's a solution that isn't hard or overwhelming. With SyncedUp's estimating and job tracking software, you can plan for it and hit your profit goals all while cutting your estimating time by up to 90%. Do you know where your money is going? Are you sure you're even making money? SyncedUp will show you exactly where your money is going with its simple budgeting tool, revealing those cash leaks so you can take back control of your business. Do you wonder if all those payroll hours are making you money or costing you money? SyncedUp tracks your unbillable labor, helping you optimize for project efficiency and ensuring each job is profitable. At SyncedUp, they're here to help contractors thrive, not just survive. Get a budgeting consultation with a SyncedUp expert looking over your shoulder to help you optimize your company's budget for free using the link in the show notes. If you love what you see, you can use the TCL discount and get 20% off on your first 6 months. Annual plan is required. Just click on the link in the show notes to book your call with the sales team and mention the TCL podcast. Check out SyncedUp.com and at SyncedUp on IG to level up your business. Choose Dahl for your plumbing needs and discover the peace of mind that comes with their unwavering reliability and exceptional service. Experience the Dahl difference and join the growing community of contractors who trust in their expertise and rely on their products. Check out Dahl at www.dahlvalve.com and on social at Dahl Valve. Hey, architects and builders, do you want to stand out from the competition? Fraser Wood Siding has your back. Fraser Wood Siding is a leader in pre-finished wood siding. They manufacture beautiful pre-finished wood siding using only the highest quality PEFC certified Canadian softwood. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Supplied by the global leader in paints, Sherwin-Williams. Whether your design taste is classic, contemporary, conservative, or bold, they've got you covered. They'll gladly match the color of any paint manufacturer and send a sample on an actual piece of Fraser Wood Siding in just a few days. Visit their website at www.fraserwoodsiding.com and reach out about your upcoming projects to benefit from their industry-leading lead times. Fraser Wood Siding, get inspired. Looking for cutting-edge solutions for your spray foam needs? Look no further than Elastichem Specialty Chemicals. With a remarkable track record spanning over three decades, Elastichem stands as an industry-leading supplying contractors across Canada with top-grade closed-cell, open-cell, and specialty foam products and accessories. Experience hassle-free spraying in both summer and winter with Insulthane Extreme, Canada's groundbreaking HFO closed-cell product. Time is precious, and we know it. Optimize your efficiency and avoid downtime by choosing the best products with the best technical and customer support. Elevate your spray foam game today with Insulthane Spray Foam products by Elastichem. Give them a try today. Visit their website at www.elastichem.com or give them a call at 1-877-787-2436. This podcast is brought to you by Redmond Distributing, a proud family-owned and operated HVAC supplier, serving Ontario for the past 22 years. With warehouses conveniently located in both Mississauga and Ottawa, they specialize in providing premium HVAC and hearth equipment across the region. Redmond Distributing is committed to supporting HVAC businesses with their dedicated customer service, reliable warranties, free training sessions in their operational facility, inventory management, and free delivery to most locations in Southern Ontario. For a partnership with true HVAC equipment specialists, choose Redmond Distributing. Explore more at www.redmonddistributing.com. And now, okay, where do we begin, AJ? Like, where do we...
Where your podcast.
How many years have you been in construction?
Let's start there. In construction, since I was... First time I walked on a construction site was the summer between grade 7 and 8 with my grandfather.
What was his trade?
He was underground utilities, so civil construction.
Okay.
So a lot of hydro lines, gas lines, stuff like that.
So the site that you jumped on, was it a public site or was it a private site?
It was a private site, like developers. So developer for like new homes and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
So we're putting a new gas line. Yeah, all the underground and stuff.
All right.
It sucked, but I was making money, man. Like I was like
grade
clearing.
Seven, grade 8, how old are you in grade 7? I'm
13, 14. And it wasn't like come to work with grandpa when you want. It was like go with the Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
And from the beginning, I was like, oh, I hate school. I love this. I'm making money, right? And I think my first week, he's like, hey, go over there. We got to find the gas line. Start digging a hole. I'm like, all right. He goes, when you see the yellow pipe, he goes, you stop. I swear to God, I dug for 3 days.
He
comes back and he goes, there's no gas line there. Go to school. And I'm like, I dug a 4 foot hole, like over and over.
Did he want to just see that you could dig or?
No, it was immigrant Italian. Grandfather wanted better for his grandkids, so it was kind of one of those, like, you don't want this, go to school. Kind of, it's that mentality, right?
Okay, all right.
But I stuck with it, and then when I was, like, 17, went full-time with it. Did that for, like, 10 years, went to the union, got my full credits by the time
did
I was,
10
like,
years of what? Like,
the underground utilities.
All the underground utilities. Yeah. And then did you union?
No, I was unionized the whole time through.
Okay.
And I had, like, my full credits by the time I was, like, 32 or something like that. Full pension from the union and stuff.
Wow.
And yeah. But I put in a lot of hours. Like it was like 6 days a week, 12-hour days all the time. And then well, 10
that,
hours. But
after that decade, what'd you get into?
Then I moved into custom carpentry. And from there.
Completely different than underground.
I did a little bit of custom carpentry through the summer, like through the summers and or during, right out of high school, I did like a year and a half of custom carpentry there. And I always loved it. Right. And I always liked like angles and math and stuff like that. So when I went off my own, it started out as custom carpentry, just, you know, feature walls, built in stuff like that. And then, you know, someone asked, hey, can you do hardwood floors? I'm like, they can do it, I can do it, kind of thing, right? But then I got fancy with like borders and designs and medallions and stuff like that, and that rolled into, hey, can you do the whole main floor and take out this wall? I'm like, I can call a framer, we can figure it out, right?
Did you do the flooring site finish as well too, or was it all pre-finish?
No, it was all pre-finished.
It was all pre-finished. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it rolled into, can you do a bathroom or can you do this? And I started calling, you know, finding a plumber and finding an electrician. And I've always been adamant there's a person for every job.
But where were you finding the leads?
I'd get called for a custom flooring job and they're like, oh, I'd love to like,
no, but the trades. So you were like, they asked you, can you do this? Just cold call.
Cold call trades.
They didn't know who you were.
I went out for coffee with them and stuff like that. And met up with them and I got a good vibe and they were good people and started working with them and just slowly, gradually got a full army of sub trades. Now we can do a house from the ground up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was like, how long has AC been around now?
3.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how's that going?
Good, good. I'm loving it.
3.5 years. So you're basically a COVID company again.
I literally quit my job. I think it was a Tuesday before COVID hit. And I was told my wife, and we had an agreement, like I was going to go off my own. That was a, and we had like,
it was
a,
already in the car.
We had a little kind of like a nest egg building up and say, okay, end of this year, we're going to do it. And then one day on the job site, I remember we were just over digging something. And I was like, I'm too smart for this. Like, this is just BS. Like, I'm done. Right. Went back to the office, said, I quit. And he's like, okay, I know you're frustrated. Go on EI, this and that. I'm like, nope. I go, I'm done. No EI, no nothing. Sink the ship, learn to swim kind of thing. Wednesday, it was bad weather, so I told my wife I was staying home from work. And then Thursday, I'm like, I quit my job.
Oh, you didn't tell her the first
time? No, and then she's like, the world shut down. I'm like, what do you mean the world shut down? I go, the world can't shut down. She goes, have you heard, like, COVID? I mean, do you not watch the news? And I'm like, what's this COVID thing? I looked around. She goes, you can't do any work. You can't go in people's houses, this and that. I'm like, I guess we're going to figure it out now, aren't we? So I got to give her credit. Like, I was a typical trades guy. And
just blinders.
Like,
just
going. Yeah, and you know what I mean? Like, I go for wings and beers with my buddies at the time. And like, if I say I was going to be home at like 9, I'll be home at like 11:30 in a cab, right? Kind of guy. So I'll give her credit for putting her trust in me, but she knew I was a hard worker. So she's like, I had no doubt you were going to make it. But looking back at it, I'm like, I don't know if I'd trust myself. Like,
so how did you get over that hurdle of you can't get into people's homes?
Well, I had some side jobs booked up, and that's okay. When it was kind of getting too much, where it's like, I was working at the underground construction company throughout the week. If we had a rain day, I'd catch up on a job, or weekends I'd work like side jobs, stuff like that. And it was one of those, like, I have enough work where I can keep going. So we had like things in line and contracts signed and stuff like that. And then just slowly snowballed from there. Right. So
yeah,
step by step, and slowly just kept building up. And
so now, how's this last year been? Because now we're out of the COVID years and high prices of material and all that crap. And now we're kind of stabilizing. Right.
Yeah. And I made some different choices at the beginning of this year. It's because I found during COVID, like, I got caught up in the rat race of trying to keep people happy and, you know, trying to get things done and stuff like that. But as a new business owner, especially the first year, it was one of those like, oh, I need, you know, 7 months of work booked, and I need this and I need that. And so I started stacking some cash. And this year was the first year where it's kind of like, no, we're going to select our jobs. We're going to choose what we do. We're going to work with specific homeowners. We almost turned the tables where it's like, you know, you want the work, but it's kind of like, I'm not going to get in over my head, because you don't want to get slow. Like, especially as a general contractor, like, it's hard competing with, you're stuck between home builders and you're stuck between handymen.
Yep.
So now, like, we don't do like the powder room. You come in, like, all my vanity switched out and the tiles in my powder room changed.
That's not,
I'm like,
part of your
scope. I go, honestly, for me to come in, it's not financially feasible for you. Yeah. I'm not trying to be that guy, but like, before I'd go in and do that. And now I'm like, well, now I'm making $50 on the whole job, and, you know, I'm spending a week doing this. I'm like, it's not worth my time, and it's not worth to the homeowner. They're actually paying more than they need to. So let's kind of assess and make standards of what jobs we're going to take on. And, you know, this year kind of slowed down a little bit, but, you know, we're steady. My guys, you know, always got hours coming in and stuff like that. And like,
how many you got on the crew?
I only have one labor, one admin.
And then you sub everybody else?
Everyone else is sub. Honestly, that's my motto. It's like, there's a guy for every job, and just, I don't have to babysit. Like,
and you're loving, well, I call it trade sitting, but you're loving the management side of everything?
Yeah, I'm really loving the management, where now I'm seeing so many like downfalls with trades guys.
In what respect?
I'm seeing guys break their backs when I'm like, you've been around for 10 years. Like, you don't need to be, you know, killing yourself on the tools. Like, so I've actually gone ahead and started a business solutions company to help guys with SOPs, manager KPIs, automate things, build out CRM systems and stuff. Because I'm like, there's so much value in that.
Yeah.
And that's what I was talking about earlier, like different season in life. I feel like I'm in a different season of business right now, where it's like, I've been able to take, and my business has done well, where now I feel like I want to give back a little bit, and I can have a little more passion in what I do. And I always loved like the contracting part of it, but now I see some of my trades and like, they're pulling their hair out. And you know how it is on the job site. Like, I see them pulling, like, writing notes on the side of their boot. And I'm like, guys, there's a better way to do this. Like, we're in 2024. Like, you should not have paper. You should not have, like, I understand there's days, but
do they all think that it's like, if I take this one step forward, I'm not really going to move all that fast. So then it's not really going to advance. So I'm going to revert back to the way I've always done it.
that's a big thing. And I find a big thing holding back, I guess, tradesmen that run their own business is spending money. They don't realize like
on
that
what?
Stuff like an admin part-time.
Okay.
Like not having to answer the phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, like it changes your life and it makes your job better. You're not scrambling on the job site.
I agree.
How does that client feel when you're supposed to be doing a job for them and you're on the phone for 15 minutes and you know, your laborer, your apprentice is inside doing the work and they're like, well, you know, I'm paying for an electrician. I got an apprentice doing it because you're sitting on the phone. It's kind of like, I know it doesn't matter who's doing the job as long as it's done right, but clients don't look at it like that, right? Like when I brought on an admin, it changed my life. Like it really changed.
No, a lot of guys are like saying that. They're saying the moment that you got rid of all that responsibility,
yeah,
it became someone else's. You had free time to do a bunch of other stuff that was far more valuable.
And customer service gets better.
Yeah.
Like someone tries to call you, they don't hear a saw going off in the background. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. What are we going to do with this? What are we going to do with that? It's like, send an email. This is my admin. She deals with the day-to-day. Send an email to get a response right away. That's professional, this, that. Like,
so what's that costing you to do that, to set someone up like that for your business?
Right now, we're trying to build it out per the contractor, what you need, right? So we can range from a one-time setup fee of $1,500, and we'll kind of build out some SLPs and stuff for you. So you have, like, in our business, we have someone inquires about an estimate. It goes to the admin. They fill out the form. It's sent immediately. 3 days later, they get a calendar in, or 3 hours later, they get a calendar invite. They set the appointment. They get a reminder 1 day before. So they're like, even if your admin quits, the next person can look at that chart and say, that's what I do with that. Yeah, that it's a simple SLP, right? But yeah. I talked to so many guys and they don't even know what an SLP is. And I'm like,
because they're one man shops.
They're one man shops, or they have two guys with a second van, or,
yeah,
you know, and their head's buried in the business, right? And I'm like, I get it and I can respect it. And I know some guys just don't want to get off the tools, but you also have to be honest. Like, are you going to do that until you're 65?
And you shouldn't be doing that until you're 65.
Why do you start a business? Yeah. Why do you get into trade? So
you start, you can a business, bank
money,
because you want
to buy back your time.
Exactly. That's exactly
what it
right.
is, right?
Yeah. So did you start calculating all the profit that you could possibly get and all the time that you could possibly save? Is that the reason why you started realizing, if I keep on going down this path and I'm handling everything and I'm on site and I'm estimating and I'm managing all the crews and everybody, that, like, there's no time for me to do sales, little bit of time to do sales. So you can't move the business forward. But then you started realizing, if I let go of this, I make more money and I have more time. That's the cause and effect of it.
That was the cause and effect of it initially. And then slowly got into, again, buying back my time. It's like, what was my time worth? Like, someone's asked me, do I want grays or blues? And I'm like, that's not a decision for me. That's, even with my wife, like, I would come home and I'd show her a shower we did. And she's like, why would you go with the 3x6 subway tile? Why don't you go with the 9x4 beveled edge, triple end glaze this? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't care. Just pick a tile. Like, they just picked a tile. I put it in. That's all that matters, right? But she's always had an eye for it.
It's the client's decision. It's their bad.
Yeah, but she's always had an eye for it.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'm like, you know what? You might be actually pretty good at this. Because we've gone through three houses and everyone's like, even when we sold our houses, the agent came in and said, I don't need to stage it. Like, your wife did a great job. So 1 year at Christmas, I just handed her an envelope and said, I just signed you up for college. Go back, get your interior design license and come work with me full time. So she does all my design work full time.
Nice.
And again, that was like delegating, right? And that's another SOP where it's like, I get signed on for the project. Here's a form. My wife takes it, fills it out with the client. All your selections are there, just like a builder, right? And you're almost getting the builder white glove service, but from a contractor through a renovation, right? But you're getting a little bit better service than you are with a handyman, where he's calling you at Home Depot saying, hey, this one's on sale. Like,
which is not the best way to go.
It's not, right?
So what do you handle? I mean, it's always great to set up these systems and have it all easily navigating through, right?
Yeah.
But what happens when you get a client that just becomes a dick and then they start becoming difficult at that and they try to get off the path of the systems?
We try to draw straight, like, solid lines, what's going to get done, what's not going to get done. So when we estimate your project, I'll estimate it from start to finish, because we've had that we'll do demo ourselves. Well, my Uncle Paul can do it. Okay, and then Uncle Paul gets drunk on Friday and doesn't get it done on Saturday. And I tell them, we're going to start the following Wednesday. So, like, this needs to be done. So when that happens, it's kind of like, well, I quoted you on demo. You know how much you're going to pay. So now my demo team is going to come in. So it's like, you don't get it done, I'm going to get it done. So if they want to start like picking their own material, I say, this is your square footage. It has to be there on that date. It's not there, it gets postponed. Next time he's available is the time he'll come back. You know, and it sounds harsh, but it runs efficiently.
It's just keeping them on track, right?
Well,
and but the problem is that they have their own circle of friends. They have their own research. They have all that stuff that's variables to you, what they agreed.
Yeah.
Price-wise.
But even with like red seal trades where it affects my permits and stuff, I tell them like, we'll get to the point, everybody knows an electrician. And someone's like, I'll bring in my own electrician. I'm like, okay, when the electrician starts, right? I will, and this is, we do this more for like referrals or like friends and stuff. Okay, you have your own electrician, great. When it's time for electrician comes in, we send you a final bill. We close out the project. We'll send you an email, a promise to return. When the electrician's done by this date, we'll come back and we'll open a new invoice. So God forbid your electrician screws something up or anything, it's on you. It's not during our project. It's not, because even like a lot of guys don't realize over 50 grand, you got to register with the Ministry of Labor for a notice of project.
No, of course. Yeah.
But a lot of guys aren't doing that. Guys aren't even pulling permits anymore.
A little bit, AJ. So what do you mean red seal was affecting your permits?
Well, I'm saying if I need to get inspections or something done. So like if I need an ESA permit, they're like, I have my own electrician.
Who's saying that? The client?
Say the client does, right?
Well, no. Then the client has to open up their own ESA, and ESA offers that. The client can open up their own permit.
But the reason I close out my invoice is so they can't turn around and say, he's on the project too. God forbid they get an electrician that's not certified or something like that. My project.
You still entertaining that? Because I find a lot of contractors don't want to entertain that. It's a variable that is going to affect your deliverables. That's why I'm saying it.
To an extent.
Yeah.
You understand, Orangeville is like a small town. So 90% of the time, I know the electrician, I know the drywaller, I know the plumber.
What's the motivating factor behind the client saying, I know a guy? It's money.
Yeah, it's finalizing.
They want to save some money.
They want to save some
money.
Going
with somebody that they know.
Yeah, and I've had projects where, like, for instance, one, they're like, I've always used this electrician in town. That's the only electrician I've ever used. I know him personally. I've worked with him. He's been on my project. He's one of my electricians I'd call tomorrow. Right? He's not the one I was going to assign to that project, but I'm like, yeah, no problem. Go ahead with them. And they're like, we'd like to pay him directly. Whatever their deal is, I don't care, but you're going to get a final invoice before he starts and you're going to get a new invoice opened up when he's done. So I can do a site walkthrough, make sure he didn't drill through a bunch of LVLs and stuff like that. Like anything that happens in that process.
I like that you're closing one and opening up another.
It's liability. That's what it is.
It's 100% liability. Yeah. You're covering your ass at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can say, no, my project date ended this day. And it started that day.
Yeah.
So even if the Ministry of Labor comes around, right? Because we do a lot of like full house guts and additions. So, you know, neighbors tend to call and, you know, people in the neighborhood.
Everybody.
I know, but yeah. I had to protect myself. Of course, I have paperwork saying, no, our agreement was they're going to bring in their own trade. My project ended on this day and we're opening a new project as of this day.
So why don't they just go with you and your team? Are they really saving in the end? Because now realistically, you're adding time to schedule.
Now that we've built kind of like a brand, you know, like Dufferin County.
Yeah.
I find a lot of them it still has that small town feel and a lot of it's loyalty. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, I know.
So they have their community groups, they have their networking.
Yeah. And sometimes it's a neighbor, right?
Yeah.
Like this is what I'm talking about. Like the electrician literally lives two doors down. So I'm like, okay, I know him. I've worked with him. He's been on my jobs. He's a great guy. Like, I have no problem working with him. Okay, we'll do it.
So you getting into construction today, would you change anything? Would it be different than when you got in?
No. I think every step along the way, I either learned something or it helped me develop for something else down the road.
But you were looking at efficiencies and you were looking at trying to figure out how to streamline this, right?
Yeah.
Because obviously the majority of the stigma, the construction industry doesn't do this, the majority of them. They're always trying to catch up to what they have. And as long as their book is full, their week is full, we're making money. That's not the truth, but we think we're making money. But you weren't looking at it that way.
No, I will spend every dime I have to be more efficient. Like I will literally be that guy where right now I'm in two different masterminds. And you pay monthly for them. And like people make jokes like you pay for your friends. It's like an ongoing joke.
No, you're paying for knowledge.
People don't see that because I like get on calls with these guys, you know, just new member to the group. Yeah, let's just get on a call, get to know each other, stuff like that. But like I said earlier, like you want to know what's at the end of a path, talk to the guy coming back. I find it streamlined me, right? And I think this business solutions thing is really hoping to open some guy's eyes that, like, you know, you spend a little bit of money, you put yourself out there, you invest in yourself, it's going to come back tenfold. Like now with my business, I'm off the tools. I'm, you know, like, because I used to do all the finishes myself.
But going into the business, you already knew that that was going to be one day.
That was a goal, yeah, to get, and that was like the long-term plan, right? I didn't know how I was going to get there, but I'm like, people are doing it. So it's got to be possible. Just how do you do it, right? And that's how I've kind of structured the way I've gone about it. And I'm hoping to give that to other people because, like, I see some, even like, you become friends with these traits, right? Yeah. You see them breaking their backs. They're like, I just had a friend who just broke up a partnership in his business. Say, like, I don't know how I'm going to handle all this. I'm like, let's jump on a call. Let's chat it out. You know, I'll do what I can. And I'll just give you some suggestions. If you like what I do, then, you know, we can talk about it. Right. And not to make a sale, but I'm like, you're literally running around like a monkey with your head cut off. And this could be so much more efficient. Like, you can have someone deal with everything you think you can deal with. And that's a big thing too, is I'm sure you see it. It's like, no one else can do it but me. Yeah. And I always hear like, no one can do this, or no one can answer the phone and deal with my clients. No one can, you know, do customer service like me, or no one can quote for me. I'm like,
if that's, I can, every tradesperson does that.
I know, right? But if I can quote a whole house and create products and services with plug and play numbers for Lily foundation to the last shingle on the top of the roof, you can do it for throwing in some pot lights or changing a toilet. Like,
why do tradespeople have such a hard time letting go of that? Like, they just don't realize that you learn those skills at some point in your life. Someone else is going to learn those skills. And so, or you're going to teach that person. Let them excel, and then you get off the tools.
I think a lot of it has to do with the circle they're in. Like, trades have this mentality where they're rough, tough, around, like, rough around the edges, blue collar. I'm on the tools. Like, 99% of what I learned with getting off the tools and building out SOPs and stuff was when I removed myself from that environment and put myself in stuff like a mastermind group with other business owners that are now, you know, doing podcasts all day, or they're like, you know, doing consulting, or they're just kind of, they've pulled themselves out of the business because they've delegated on how to do that. And I think a big eye opener for me was seeing these guys do it. I'm like, well, I can do that.
Well, here's my question for you, AJ, is that do you think most older tradespeople are still on the tools because they haven't actually set up their retirement exit?
Oh, 100%. 100%. And that comes
down. So they have to work.
They have
to. They need the dollar.
They need the money coming in, right? And
that's just poor planning, right?
That's poor planning. And I think a lot of it is a shiny object syndrome. Because as a tradesman, like, you know, when the fountain's on, it's on, right?
Yeah.
And I find they don't manage it properly when the fountain's on. Like, I want a full new, you know, I want all the new pack outs and tools, or I want
these
the
$150,000
truck and stuff.
Yeah,
and
these are all
they're
mistakes.
Not planning for down the road. But, yeah.
Does that older tradesperson get off the tools and still have enough to retire? How does that happen? Because you're going to have a lot of people like, listen, you younger guys, as much as you guys are younger and faster and you're, you want to get to where we got to a lot sooner, you're also on the good side figuring out how to be more efficient and how to maximize your profitability, your time. You're doing all this stuff, your time management properly.
Yeah.
But now, you know, you get guys that are in their 30s and 40s and 50s that didn't do any of that stuff, and they have to continue working, and they have to eventually get off the tools, but they don't have anything. They can't do anything else.
Yeah.
In life. So they're not going to get a job someplace else in another industry or anything like that. So we have to figure out a way, how can these individuals still retire sooner so then they're not breaking their bodies, right?
And that's the thing with being more efficient, is you don't have to stop working. Like, if you run your business properly, you could work in your business till you're 80, right?
It's different scopes of work.
Yeah, it's different scopes of work. Like, say we have, you know, a bricky, right? And he's out there and he's bringing it along as apprentice. He's paying his apprentice $25 an hour. He's only billing him out at 30. Yeah. That guy should be billed out at 55, 60 bucks an hour.
Yeah.
Because you got to make money on that guy. Like, that's the way it is, right? And they're like, well, who's going to pay him 50 bucks an hour? And I'm like, well, when that person wants, you know, that the two trucks outside and the proper tools and everything like that, that comes at a cost, right? If they want to call the company and say, hey, you know, like, I got a question about this, and you have an admin picking up the phone, that comes at a cost. And that's where you just got to, like, learn to accept.
See, their mindset is that if they're ever asked by the client, how much are we paying your crew here? First of all, you don't have to tell your client how much you're paying your crew, their hourly rate.
Yeah.
This is what it costs for you to hire me. This is what it costs to do the project that you want me to do.
Yeah.
And that's it. How I pay my crew is how I run my business.
Yeah. And I think guys look at it as that's how much it costs. And, you know, if I do this job this week for 40 hours at $50 an hour, I'm going to make X amount by the end of the week. It's like, you got to stop looking at what you're making and look at what the company's making. I think that's why a lot of these old guys can't get off the tools, because they're calculating their paycheck.
They're week to week. I mean, it's week to week, man.
That's what it is, right?
Seriously, like, for sure.
You got to look at it and say, hey, you know what? Like, I hit a slow time every December, January, and my overhead a month is 10 grand. So I got to bank 20 grand. Like, throughout the year, I got to bill out. And I hate to say it, but it is what it is. You want a company with reputation behind them. You want a company that's going to be available, a company that's going to be around next year for a warranty issue. Like, that's what it costs to operate that business.
What about the whiners that are saying, I can't find clients that are going to pay these numbers? You're looking at the wrong clients.
Other people are getting those jobs.
People are still going to, yeah.
People are getting those jobs. Like, it is what it is. That, or you need to restructure on what your actual overhead is in your business.
That's
like,
another point.
Did you put yourself in a situation where you're paying, you know, for this and bought the new truck and, you know, you're financing that tool and financing this trailer? Like, you know, you kind of put yourself in a situation where now your company is operating at, you know, 15 grand a month just to stay afloat. Well, you shouldn't have put it in that position. So now you got to realize when you're billing out clients, like, that's what it costs to hire your company.
Here's something that I saw recently on social media, and it's a positive in my eyes completely, but it's portraying a negative to the younger trades. And what I'm talking about is that I'm seeing very small companies that have become big entities. And I'm saying small because when I first met them 15 years ago, or I met them maybe 6 or 7 years ago, they were a small one person, maybe partner, small little shop, all that shit. Now they're building custom warehouse space and logistics, office space, branching off, which is amazing. I love seeing this thriving community of contractors building corporations that are partnering with other people and sharing spaces and having this like big sign here and this great. And it's all, they got the best tradespeople to renovate the place. It's all great. But the negative part of all that is the younger trades, and I go back to the younger trades wanting to get there sooner, are looking at this going, I'm 1 year, 2 year into my business. I want to be where they are in my third year. But they're not understanding that that person took 10 plus years to get to that point where they're showing off a new space that they built, a new shop that they built for bigger projects. They slowly, like you said, incrementally grew their clientele and their profit margin to finally pull that trigger and go, you know what, we're going to get a 5,000 square foot workshop space. We're going to get new machinery. We're going to get all this other stuff. We're going to have admin staff. We're going to have all this stuff because that's making them money. But the filter of social media is teaching these kids that you can have this next week.
Yeah.
I have a problem with that part of it.
I have a huge problem with that because I feel like with my business, I had to take a different angle, because when you're in a space where you're doing like full additions or you're doing like full house guts, stuff like that, when you're a one man show, like, you don't get called very much. You don't get looked at, right? So you see these guys come in and they spend all this money thinking they're going to just hit the ground running and they're going to take off. I'm like, it doesn't work like that. No. Like, My business personally, for 6 months, I said, you know what, I need to portray my business as like a little bit bigger than it actually is. I opened two email addresses, admin and GC. I ran the admin for 6 months under like, I think it was called like administrator coordinator. And I wrote as if I was my own admin.
Of course.
And like portrayed myself as an admin. Of course. I'm like, hey, I'll get the office to deal with that. No problem. You get an email and then jump my phone, switch accounts. But the perception was bigger. But then you get these guys, like you said, and they want this, like, it comes down to that shiny object syndrome. Like, they,
yeah.
I think everyone's got to go through the imposter syndrome where you're in a room where you don't feel like you belong and then realize how long it took these guys to get there. But I don't think the young guys have the patience for that. And that's a big thing in the trades.
Or even ask them, what did they really go through to get to this point? It's nice to see the success right now today,
yeah,
but you need to understand the hardships that took to get there.
And you don't see the ugliness on social media. You don't, right? Like, no. You take these influencers, these guys that made and everything. There's no ugliness on there, right? It's all like, look at me, look what I did, look what I built. I'm like, well, scroll back, you know, 6,000 posts and look at the bottom, and I guarantee that guy was wearing work boots with a shovel, like kind of thing, or, you know, had a hammer drill in his hand covered in concrete for 3/4 of a day. But the impatience of the, you know, younger trades, they want to get there now, right?
But if you meet any of these people that you look up to, pick their brain and just ask them those questions. Don't ask them about all the shiny stuff like you say. Those questions today, like, really inquire about the yesterday, man.
Yeah, I think a lot of these guys aren't present. They're very like, that's where I want to be. That's the goal. Yeah. That's where I want to be. Like, I, like, for instance, when I'm in these masterminds, when I ask a question with what the problem I'm having with now, right now. Like, this is my problem. How did you guys solve it, kind of thing? And I find some of these guys come in and they're like, well, you know, what are you doing over there? It's like, well, bro, you're 5 years out from that. Take it easy. Like, you don't need to know the answer to that right now. Like, you know what I mean? And that goes back to, like, scrolling through the podcast. 500, how many are you in now?
576 or something.
Something like that, right? Yeah. Not every episode is going to resonate with me right now. Of course
not. Right? It's not supposed to.
But you can go back and see where you're at, and that's what helps fast track you. But that's putting in time. That's putting in the effort. That's, you know, taking it upon yourself. Like, it's not handed to you. And I think that's the problem with a lot of young trades. Like, you know, you get guys that go in, they're like, oh, I roughed in a whole house in a day. It's like, okay, well, you know, do 300 of those and then come talk to me. Don't tell me that you did one once really quick, because, you know, I could sprint once, but, you know, it's a marathon. Can you do that every day for the next 2 years? Then come talk to me.
How many of these contractors, the younger ones, you think will still be in the game in their 40s? If they're getting in their 20s and they build something, I guess there's two roads of thought here, where they're building it to the point where it could be sold to somebody else, which is great that you built it. And that's great, because 20 years ago, it wasn't that case. It was a lot of one-man shops, magnetic sign on the side of the van or whatever it was, pickup truck. And then they ended up, once they closed the shop, they closed the shop. They never thought, that generation never thought to build something that someone else would want to acquire it, right?
Yeah.
But now this generation is totally looking at the one road where it's like, let me build this so then someone would want to buy it, buy my clientele, buy my systems. Or the other option is that I just want to get out of the game completely and just close it up and move on to a different industry and make money from that.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's where I get nervous, where you've got a lot of skilled people that get in, have the tricks, build their product, build their brand, and then they get out within 20 years.
I think a lot of the young guys, you're going to see them, and this goes back to the impatience thing again. I find you're going to get guys go in, be the apprentice, put in their time, get their license, and up and off and start their own gig.
Yeah.
You're going to get those guys back. I think you are going to get a full circle where they're kind of like, you know, you get in the ring with the wrong boxer too soon. Like, you know, you can get your bell rung a few times and then kind of like, well, it's not what I thought it was. I'm just going to go back and work for someone else.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it's like, you're going to hear a lot of those stories. Now, this might be biased, but I do hear with guys that had tried to go and run their own business and then they're back working for someone. It's like, oh, you know, the clients weren't right for me, or, you know, screw the clients. It wasn't worth the time. It was like an ego thing. They couldn't admit they couldn't go out and
they couldn't build a business.
Yeah, they couldn't be a business owner.
That's all.
And that's all it is. But
there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's not. But they can't put the ego aside and just say running a business isn't for me. I'm okay being an employee. You know, or he begged me to come back. I hate that. Like,
no, that makes no like, sense. You're better off just saying, listen, I hated running the business. I wasn't very good at it. I didn't want to spend the time and effort doing it. And I left on good terms. So then I didn't burn any bridges and I want to come back and I'm going, listen, I want you to take care of all the overhead. I don't care about that. I'll come in and I'll provide a great service for you. I'll do the details that you need me to do. And then we'll both be happy. There's nothing wrong with that.
No. And I think in a few years you're going to see, because nothing against the old school guys, because the old school guys is who I grew up with. And like, I've learned so much from them.
Yeah.
And you won't beat that work ethic, right?
Yeah.
But I think a lot of guys getting the trades are smarter. And I think you're going to hear the word entrepreneur come up a lot more going forward, because you're going to have the guy running the business that wants to step back, but you're going to have the tradesman who likes being on the tools. And as you probably know on your show, like, guys love being on the tools.
Yeah.
And there's nothing, no shortchange of that. Like, that's great, but they don't want to do the business part of it. So, like, that's where the entrepreneur comes in, where it's kind of like, okay, you know what, bud? You run the business, get the jobs, bring them in. I'll crush the jobs. Give me 2-3 good guys. I'll make sure jobs get crushed, but don't call me for financials. Don't call me, you know, saying we're running short on this job. I'll do what I need to do to get it done. And I think that's where a lot of these guys that are smarter nowadays on the tools and they're more educated, you're going to have a lot more, you're gonna see a lot more entrepreneurs or a lot more like, say, equity owners in a business or a profit sharing agreement or something like that. Yeah. Because I think a lot of these guys are just shy of running a business, but they got enough to operate the business. And that's where you have the whole visionary integrator kind of collaboration. And I think you're gonna see a lot of that in the trades coming forward. Because I think you're gonna have a lot of guys that aren't in the trades and saying, I can run an HVAC, this like HVAC craze. I got guys that were accountants, like, I'm gonna start an HVAC company. Like, but it, a lot of it's wholesale and commercial, don't get me wrong. But
it's a numbers game at that point.
That's what it is. The problem
is that, see, okay, a successful HVAC company, a successful any mechanical trade company is built off the back of customer service.
Yeah.
Customer service is built off the back of you understanding what the skill and the trade is all about. So you understand that. So if you want to just come, if you're coming from a different industry that has those two things where you're really good at that customer service side of it and you can crank whatever gadget it is, then great, it'll work for you. But if you're just going in because you're looking at the numbers, you're seeing HVAC companies, I go back to the successful smaller companies that started 5, 10, 15 years ago, they had lots of ups and downs, man. Yeah. They took a huge, and there's a huge amount of investment in the very front end. And then you have to build your clientele. And now you're dealing with, specifically now, this year, last year, you're dealing with a lot of HVAC companies that are compete bidding. So before, it was like word of mouth, they were doing really well. They would get a quote, submit it, and get it done. The client was very confident and happy with that person and that company and that quote. Now, that quote is being competed against with two other quotes. So yeah. Now you're getting more people in the space. So now you really have to up your game on customer service side of things and skilled trades, right?
Yeah, and like the HVAC, I was just using HVAC as an example, but it is that industry where you can get someone that can financially back something really well and you get a good technician together, partner them up. Like, you know,
it could work.
Yeah,
totally,
there's somebody to be reckoned with, right? Like,
I'm curious about the mastermind classes that you're taking, because there's lots of people that have been on the show and they've shared with me what they're doing on the side and how it's been benefiting them. But I haven't really asked them about how do you quantify the ROI on that? So whatever, if you're paying, like I've heard, like you could be paying as much as like $3,500 a month or whatever. Yeah. Depends on what it is and the accessibility. And a lot of it is it has to do with the tank that you're thrown into on the opportunities that you can speak to certain people. Yeah. Not saying that you're speaking to other tradespeople or other people that are running construction businesses. And I'm like, that's not where the skills are. It's like you're speaking to other business people that are doing really well in their business, their industry, and what they learned. So the ROI on that, how do you quantify spending that dollar value? And then you got to see growth in your business, right? Yeah.
And the ROI I find on a mastermind is not a specific dollar amount. It's never,
no,
it's like,
it's a bunch of things.
Yeah. It's like me as a person altogether has just developed to be better. Right. And then I see where like there's guys that just up and leave and move to Mexico and work remotely and they let their business run themselves. Like literally there's one guy in one of our groups where he's like, I'm the problem solver in the business. Screw it. I'm out. Like I'm moving to Mexico and figure it out, guys. Like, and you're seeing guys do this and I'm like, well, there's got to be like a trick or a secret to it. And literally it's just little bits of like nugget information from different aspects of different people. Like things like learning to delegate tasks, right? There's going to be ups, there's going to be downs, right? Learning to practice delayed gratification. And I think after COVID, you're going to see a big hit in the next 6 months with guys not realizing what delayed gratification is. Because when the money was coming in, like guys were buying all sorts of stuff. They were like,
that was the number one thing I said on the show. I said that before the pandemic started. I said, do not start buying things.
Yeah.
Start figuring out what you need to actually stay successful and do not, like, don't get caught up in the Joneses, man. Don't.
Yeah.
Like, that was the biggest thing. That was a mistake. And we saw, and now they're paying for it on a monthly. Yeah. Their leases and the interest rates that they acquired. I'm like, I hope you're bringing in the dollar value to cover that.
And don't get me wrong, like, I got caught up in it too, but like, I did stuff like, we bought a Sprinter van, but we paid it out cash.
Yeah.
We wrapped my wife's car, my truck, and like you saw my truck outside. Yeah. It's loud, right? Yeah. Imagine a Sprinter van looks exactly like that. Yeah. My wife's car is like a flat black with the
gloss. But there's a return on investment there where you're getting the dollar value for that.
But expense. It was things like in the mastermind that I learned stuff like that, where you get your ROI, where your money's actually spent well. So it's like investing in your business. It's like stacking cash in your business. It's like investing in yourself as a business owner. Like even things like right now I'm going through 75 hard and I'm on like day 9 and I see all these guys go through it. And day 9, I'm like, I'm feeling great. Like I'm actually like well hydrated. I'm doing my 2 workouts a day. I'm eating well. And that resonates to me being a better leader at work too, because now I'm in a better mood and stuff like that. And I got pushed by these guys in my mastermind to go ahead and do it. And now my employees are getting a better leader. I mean, it's like, for instance, a business solutions thing. I'm actually partnering with my admin girl.
Okay.
And me and her are being partners in the business solutions because the ROI from the mastermind taught me that like there's an integrator and a visionary. I realize I'm a visionary. I realize she's an integrator. She builds out all, I tell her, hey, I want this and this and this as an SOP. Can we build it out? Yep. Hey, our CRM, I want to automate this. I want to do this. Can we make it happen? She talks to the guy building our CRM. Yep. I'll make that happen. And I'm like, you know what? Partnerships are the way to go maybe. Mm-hmm. And now I've started a business solutions company and I'm getting an ROI off that. But I got the idea from the mastermind group saying, hey, this might be a thing. Because we only target, like our demographic, small to medium sized businesses. Right. And in these mastermind groups, you hear these business solution companies dealing with 7+ figure companies. I'm like, well, how about the little guys like me that don't realize hiring an admin and having a simple spreadsheet with what to do can help their business?
It's hugely valuable.
It's valuable. Right. So now like this mastermind's taught me that. So my ROI is now a second business. Right. My ROI is hiring the admin staff. My ROI is taking care of myself to be a better husband, better father, better leader in my company. Right. So that's where the ROI is, but guys want money. Like we were talking about the impatience. They want to be up there now. They want the money in hand. And I'm like, you don't get an ROI on money all the time. Like,
let me ask you this, AJ, because this has been coming up with some of the mechanical trades, and I don't know how I feel about it just yet. I go back to the lack of customer service with some of their suppliers and products. And what I'm getting is that they're considering possibly approaching the brands and the suppliers to buy directly. And you know where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
The problem is that, and I go back to that construction tree, so to speak, where it's like the suppliers and distributors have a very major role to play in our business. And if they're dropping the ball, then you should maybe consider looking at other suppliers or other reps.
Yeah.
I think that if you go and try to start building your network of brands where you can buy directly now, there's no way in hell that you can do that for every single product that you need. So at some point, you're still going to have to go to the suppliers. And if they get wind that you're doing this, you're going to hurt your business.
See, we only go through suppliers. I never buy directly from the brand.
But this younger generation,
they
I think what's happened is they're looking at their efficiencies and they're like, I can get rid of the distributors. I can get rid of the suppliers. I can go to them directly. And I'm like, you can, but I think it's short-term thinking.
How about that one day where you're short just, you know, a bucket full of this?
You're like, going to be marked. I'm just like, you walk in or your representative, your van, your truck shows up. You're going to be marked.
And well, you don't show up for 6 months. They're not going to ask, where have you been? I mean, and
I see your Instagram feed. I'm following you. You're doing all kinds of jobs. Where are you getting the product from?
Yeah.
You're going to get marked. That's what I'm saying. I don't think it's a good idea.
I think it's a horrible idea. I think there's suppliers for a reason. I think they've worked for how many X years? Like, there's a reason they're suppliers, right?
It's not even just supplying the product. It's the serviceability as well, too. And also warranty issues, all kinds of stuff. At that point, you're going to take that role. But the younger trades, where do I make more money? It's like you got people telling them, look at everywhere you spend money and look how you can reduce that expense. And then look at where you can increase where you charge money.
Yeah,
I get it. That's basic math. But there's certain things in construction, you can't really move those dials.
But I think a few of them are going to ruin it with the brands where they become tiresome to deal with. Because brands don't want to deal with the day-to-day. They want to ship a pallet and that's it. They're done. Like, you know what I mean? Like this.
It's about volume, about orders and stuff like
that's
that.
That's what it is, right?
Distribution supplier.
So I don't see that lasting very long. Like
some of them are trying it.
That's but you might get a powerhouse guy who's like, you know, he's got, you know, market share in an area and he can buy like pallets at a time and whatever it is, right? But that's going to be a one-off versus the guy with his buddy in the truck going there every other day. Oh, I need this too and I need that too. I think it's going to be short-lived. And I think it comes down to the specific brand, but I don't see that being sustainable. I'm going to be honest.
Like, I'm just paying attention to some of this stuff that's going on. That's why I'm just looking at
and
it.
I do see it too, right?
Yeah.
Like, but like, I try not even to get in the mix between my subs and me. Like, if there's finishes like tile or hardwood, yeah, we'll source it, right? But like the day to day, I know some generals were like, with their plumbers and electricians, they're buying boxes and they're buying couplings. I'm like,
no, that's not the GC's problem. That's not their
solution. Some GCs want to make the money on it. I know it doesn't make sense, right?
And what money are you making off of that? And I've heard that too. I heard that too, where they get a better deal on a length of pipe or whatever. And I'm like,
what's your time worth? What's your headache? God forbid you order something wrong.
Yeah.
Like, it's not
you're responsible for.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So it's not, but again, guys are looking at the money in hand, not the overall short-term ROI
thinking.
And that's short-term thinking, yeah.
Plus the networking that you're actually frowning upon when you're working with that subtrade. Like, you're upsetting them, right, by doing...
Well, subtrade makes money on the material, too. So that's like, you're taking food out of your subtrade's mouth.
Yeah, I know. But we also, GCs make money if the job goes really well and they actually are more efficient and they finished it sooner so you can get the next trade in to do the work and now you're happier, right? Yeah.
Oh, it's just a whole wormhole.
It's a bunch of, like, as much as I say I'm very complimentary of the younger trades coming in and they building it faster, getting to where we got to sooner, they're overstepping sometimes on other things, and that's going to shoot them in the foot later on.
But I'm seeing even some suppliers now stepping it up because I guess it's to do with the better customer service to compete with going directly to the manufacturer, the brand. Is like a lot of guys, like, they're willing to deliver right to site. And it's just that, hey, we'll just bring it to your site. It's just buy off us. Service. We'll bring it right to our site. Yeah. So I think a lot of people in the industry are feeling that and they're, you know, accommodating it to kind of protect themselves and stuff. But I really don't see it long lived. I just don't see how it's just, I'm just looking at the guys on the field and how unorganized some guys are. I'm like, that would be just a pain for the supplier when he could just saran wrap a skid and send it on its way. Like,
so it's interesting. I'm sure that you saw that, you know, obviously for every trade that's leaving, we're only getting so many coming in, right?
Yeah.
And we actually need a lot more that's leaving. They should stay, but they can't stay because they've already done their time and it's all good. But then also on the flip coin, you got these younger ones that are probably getting out, selling out sooner. So now we lose them as well. The industry is going to be completely different. We're not dealing with a shortage of the 80s. We're not dealing with a different kind of shortage back before the 2000s, because the shortage has something to do with what other opportunities are out there for that generation other than construction, right? And if they're smart enough, they would take on the construction role to get the work ethic that's associated with it, but also stay in there if they actually have a passion for it, which is great. My concern is that when they do about two decades of it, they want to get the hell out. Like, talking to trades today, young ones, it's not about, I don't want to be swinging this hammer when I got gray hair.
Yeah,
I do not want to be doing that. So they kind of frown upon the ones that are doing it still at gray hair, right?
Yeah, and you hear a lot of that, like, well, that's kind of me, right? Like, I literally said, like, I'm too smart for this. Like, nothing to downplay it, but, like, I'm like...
Your time is spent...
I'm almost running a business on the side while I'm doing this full time. I'm like, I could just run the business. And then as I start running the business, I'm like, I can get off the tool. So I can't discredit the guys for doing that. But I think you're going to see a new kind of role where you're going to have a lot more kind of one guy running the business. You're going to have the entrepreneur. You'll see a lot more people rewarded within a business to keep them around. So you're going to have
keep them around. I see a lot of guys doing profit sharing.
Profit sharing. You're going to have
company ownership. Eventually they can take over.
Well, there's one guy where you stick with them 5 years and the first 5 years you get 5% equity and then you get 1% every year after that. And he's up to like 6 employees. He goes, when I get to 35% equity, I step away. I should have enough people in place that it can run itself. And it's not a bad model, but then you have people in your business, like these young guys that don't want to be swinging a hammer. It's their incentive to refer someone to come into the business and say, hey, I got someone you can hire. They're
part of something. Bring them on. Growing together.
Yeah, you're going to see a lot more of the team kind of building and, like, you know, as a whole army, I guess, like, every man.
Well, that was the original idea, I guess, of the team part was the union side of things.
Yeah.
But that lost its way now. Yeah. The union is about protecting the weak. It's simple as that. I don't care how you look at it, right?
Sorry, I didn't know.
If I no. You could totally spell on the show. All kinds of
I'm not a union guy at all. Like, I was in the union, and I'm not a union
guy. It's not. Union used to be good.
Yeah.
when it started, it's corrupted now. And
you
it's
see
just,
them when they when it's time to vote. That's when you see them on site. Yeah, it's time to vote and you get t-shirts.
It's all crap, right? Yeah. So then, like, that's what I want to. I don't want to see that anymore. So that I'm seeing better benefits from the small business owner, the small mom and pop shops.
Yep.
Those one van shops that are now a fleet of shops, right? That's they're doing the exact same things that are better even than what the union's offering. So you can't even apples and apples anymore. You can't.
We're offering benefits at my company. It's four employees.
Yeah, like lots of great companies.
Four employees. I'm like, let's get benefits. Like
simple as that.
You know what I mean, it's
setting it up is not a difficult thing to do it, no. And it's worth it. Goes back to they're going to tell their two friends and so on and so on, and all of a sudden you're going to get more of a workforce coming at you.
And I think that eliminates the whole. Do you remember that, like, I can't find someone to work for me?
Yeah.
I can't find a good labor?
Yeah.
Well, maybe you're just a shitty employer.
Like, that's also an option, too. Exactly.
I hate to be that guy, but maybe you weren't a good employer. Yeah. Like, that's why you can't find good guys.
Simple
like,
as that. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think a lot of that teamwork and everything and everyone's invested, have your core values in place, stuff like that, is going to eliminate that whole I can't find someone good to work for me. I can't find good labor. It's like, well, if you make a good environment, you're going to find good labor. It's 100% true. You know what I mean? And I still think you have those laborers that are like, I'm not going to start at $25 an hour. It's like, well, you're always going to have those guys. Like,
guys. Why do they think that they have the right to start higher?
It's like a mentality when you get into construction. You know what the problem is? I think because minimum wage has gone up so much, it's like guys starting at $25 an hour, they're like, well, you know, over here is offering me 30, a high rise. Well, then go to work high rise. Well,
what goes further if you show up on a job site and you offer your availability and saying, listen, can I work for you for a week and you determine what the rate's going to be? Or you step in there first day and go, my rate is this.
I've literally had guys tell me, like, this is my rate.
Well, then have a good day. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, that's where it ended.
Like, yeah, that's what I mean. But if a person came up to you and said, listen, can I work for a week? Just tell me what you need done. I'll do it. If you like what you see, keep me on board and you give me your rate.
Yeah.
At that point, as the employer, you're going to sit down and go, you know what? This guy's legit. This guy's serious. I'm going to offer him this and see what they say.
Yeah. And we assess it with our guy, like our labor. It was kind of like, come in your first week, you're at this rate. It could be from here to here. But after we're done, we'll sit down and we'll agree on a rate after the first week, right? Yeah. And he knew it was going to be a range, right? And if it's not at the top of the range, you know why. It's because you can't do this, you can't do that, can't do that, but we're going to get to that point, right? And I find as an employer, you should find incentives instead of just raises, you find small incentives as you go, right? Like little things like now my guy drives a van, right? And I'm like, you know, if you need the van, he was moving a few weekends ago. I'm like, if you need the van to move, like,
Take it.
Like, you know what I mean?
Simple as that.
He, like, for instance, helps his grandparents out a lot. I'm like, dude, if you need a tool, just grab it, borrow it over the weekend, take it home. Like, I know it doesn't cost much and it's not really a big thing, but it's knowing he's just as entitled as everyone else in the company to use what's the company's.
He's got access to it.
Exactly. Simple and you're part of the team. So if it's going to make you better or make your life easier, on or off the hours, like, as long as we have that conversation, I'm open to it. Like, I'm good with that.
See, right? That's even funny is that those guys are coming here and they're giving you a set rate what they want. Their mindset thought process is like, it's really hard work. I want to be paid a lot for it because it's a shitty job. I can't stand it, right? Yeah. But they're not even looking over your shoulder and realizing what's been built here, what this business is all about.
Yeah.
What opportunities does the business have? What connections? You haven't even dove into having a conversation with somebody and trying to figure out, how many Kevin Bacons does this person know? Yeah. Where can I go if I work with this person for another year or two or whatever? They're not even thinking about all this shit. They're just thinking, it's hard work. I want to get paid the maximum amount because if I hate it, I'm gone after a week or I'm gone after a month or whatever it is. Such short night. That's like goes back to short-sightedness.
Because guys look at the 7 to 5, right? That's what they look at. That's how they assess their pay rate is like 7 to 5. What am I going to do in 7 to 5? I'm going to start here at 7 in the morning. I'm going to end here at 5 p.m., right? They don't look at the... It's January today. What's this company going to offer me in April?
Nobody wants to build anything.
No one wants to take the road. Like it, literally, everyone wants the jet plane or the helicopter straight to their final destination. It's like, and I think,
okay. First time I got on a motorcycle, I was scared shitless. Didn't know how to do anything, and I was wobbling. Right.
Yeah.
But then. You get better, and then all of a sudden you start riding and you start doing things that you're not supposed to be doing, but you know how to do it because you know how to actually, it takes time.
Yeah.
It just takes time, simple as that.
There's no patience. There's no patience anymore, right? That's the problem.
What's the patience? Like, is it because of the... They want to keep up with the financial Joneses on social media? Everyone that's pretending to be...
They're entitled to more. They see so many people wealthy nowadays.
But we don't know for a fact that they're wealthy. And I don't give a shit about the guys who are showing bank statements and all this crap.
They can't look past that.
Exactly.
They're like, they're doing it. I can do it. Right? And it's one thing that kills me is the I know mentality. They have had labors where it's like, no, but it's like, I'm talking to them and it's like, hey, Manny, this morning we're going to, I know. What do you know? I'm not even done talking. Like, that's the kind of like environment the younger guys in the trades are. And I'm not saying all of them. I'm just saying there's more than there's not, where it's kind of like they know everything. It's kind of like, I know what I have to do. Let's just get to the finish line. Let's streamline this. It's kind of like, no, there's a process to it. Like, you know what I mean? Guys want to get in there and just, you know, they think faster is better. You know what I mean? Especially AJ, with like finishes and stuff. Yeah.
Let's shift gears on. Yeah. I'm curious about how long has your wife been working with you now?
2.5 years.
And so then how is that whole designing, navigating the world and dealing with clients always asking for fucking shaker panels and all this other shit?
Truthfully, she deals with it all, so I don't know. Like, I take pictures of tiles when they show up on the job site saying, are these the right ones?
That's it?
Yeah, like, she literally handles it from start to finish.
But is she not, like, I can only assume, and I keep trying to get more and more designers on the show, but I need to start looking outside of this country.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, like, the designers in this country, they're always just recreating the same thing that's been done so many times. It's, like, deafening, man. Like, yeah. I can't stand it anymore. Nobody in Canada wants to take a risk because they're being paid a nice dollar to basically just deliver what they've always delivered.
Yeah, I hear a lot of designers are by the hour now. Like, they're just billing by the hour.
Because, you know, they're being fired. That's why. They're being let go. So they're realizing, well, at least I'll make my money today. And if they don't like what my ideas are all about and the client gets frustrated at me, then they'll let me go, but I've still been paid.
Yeah.
I don't have to wait for a retainer. I don't have to wait for any of this shit, right?
Yeah, and I find a lot of our projects with the design, we try to be very, I guess, mutual with what the client wants. So we start with inspiration pictures, right? It's always Pinterest or Instagram. I love this. I love that. I love that. She'll take that and she'll work in whatever their budget is. And that's what it boils down to. It's kind of like, this is what we allocated for you. If you want this, it's going to be more. If you want that, it's going to be less. You pick the good, better, or best. That's completely up to you. Mm-hmm. So we let the clients kind of run with that and let that sink in. And if they want to blow the budget, that's on you. And then she'll actually go to the supplier with them, pick out everything they want. And she'll do stuff like, say there's a shower wall tile that they love and it's $5 a square foot out of what we accounted for in the budget, right? She'll try to work with them and say, hey, okay, we can get that tile, but now the floor tile, we got to scale back a little bit and hopefully we can stay close within arm's reach of the budget, right? Yeah. That's the decision you make, right? So we've done some jobs where they're not all trendy. Like, we've done stuff with, like, kitchens with the bright blue cap, like, the navy blue cabinets. We just did, like, a green kitchen with gold, like, industrial-style hardware, stuff like that. There was a period there where I feel like everything was, like, white cabinets or gray cabinets with the Crayer marble countertop and white backsplash. I was like, but, again, that comes down to the client. It's their home. Yeah. We're not building spec homes. If we were, like, her ideas are, like, way out in left field. Like, I'll give it to her. There's days where I come home and I'm like, why do we have blue stools? She goes, watch that. She goes out to the car, runs inside, throws pillows down, a blanket. I'm like, oh, I get it. Yeah. I get it. Like, yeah, it makes sense, right? Yeah, so she does have the creativity for it, but we do respect people's budget and their style. And we're not, like I said, we're not doing spec home. So, you know, we do have to kind of.
But everyone's being safe. Everyone's just being safe on their, because they don't know where they're going to be 5 years from now.
See, she's really good at throwing a loop into, like, a feature, like, you know, one thing in a house where it's like a big feature wall, or it's like, you know, a type of flooring or something, like, especially like washrooms, like these patterned, like those Spanish tiles and stuff like that. We've done, like, there's some patterns that come out. I'm like, what is this? And she goes, wait till it's done. It looks phenomenal when it's done, but it's not something I would ever look at.
Well, you never would have probably seen it as like finished.
Yeah. That's the thing.
You saw samples of it. You saw an idea of what it was going to be about, but not until you see it finished, you realize, hang on a sec, this is pretty cool.
Yeah. And she's good at looking for new products, like the vinyl herringbone. We just did a house with that. Looks sharp by the end of it. And I'm like, vinyl herringbone, really?
They're making vinyl herringbone now? Yeah. I'm not a big fan for VFTs. I just don't. They're great for rental properties. It's fine, but for home. But everybody that's been in a condo has been living with vinyl or laminate. It was laminate beforehand, and it was vinyl now. And I guess it's a luxury unit if it's actual hardwood, right? Or engineered wood or something.
Yeah. So they have, like, we push a lot on the engineered hardwood now because you can't get the wide plank. Anything over 4.5, you can't get unless it's engineered.
Oh, engineered's perfectly fine, right? Just depends on how thick that.
I think the vinyl has a time and place for it, truthfully. If you got a high traffic home with young kids and dogs and stuff like that, I think it's a great solution for the house. Like, a lot of times with walkout basements, when we're doing basements and people have pools, I might put vinyl down. Don't even question anything else. Just put vinyl.
Yeah.
Like, it's the best way to go, especially your kids are in that 8 to 16 range and they're going to have friends over running in and out with the pool, running into the washroom.
Yeah.
That's the way to go, right? Now, if you're going to do your forever home, it's just, you know, you and your wife making it the way you want and the kids are finally gone. I'm kind of torn. I'm like, you know, I like my hardwood.
I'm still a fan of engineer. I mean, I'll always go engineer, but rental property, and you're right, high traffic areas, sure, it's there, but I'm also the same mindset that I don't think wood should be in a kitchen. That's my thought process.
I get it.
Because you're going to damage it. I don't give a shit what you say. You damage it at the sink, at the stove, and at the fridge.
I'm in a carpet. I'm still a carpet in the bedroom kind of guy.
I like carpet too. The problem is that I go back to pets. Pets and carpet are a different story, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to, you may not smell it, but other people will come by and they'll smell it. And then for you to clean those carpets is going to be a big deal, right?
Yeah.
I rather do, I mean, as counterproductive as it is, you do a really beautiful hardwood and then throw a rug on it. 80% of the floor is covered by the rug now. So you've spent the time and effort and money on the on the hardwood. And now you're spending more money on the hard on the rug. Yeah. And then same thing with the pets. The rug is just going to get destroyed, right? So, yeah you're right. You got to figure out kids and pets. What age kids are pets?
Well, I have a big thing with quotes right now where we do estimates and people are like, I have to have a bathtub for resale. And I'm like, why? And they're like, my kid still takes baths. I'm like, your kid's 4. Like, don't build your dream washroom based on your kids still taking a bath.
What do you mean? Given just a bath for the kids' bathroom? Or is it
a bath? And they're like, I don't want a stand-up shower. And I'm like, people don't realize.
I would say have one bathtub in the house.
I don't even know about that.
In the master.
Like, I think it depends on, well, in the master, if you want to do a freestanding tub or something.
That's what I'm saying. At least one bathtub.
But
one.
I have people doing like their guest bathroom and they're like, I have to have a tub for my kids. I'm like, your kid's 4. They're not going to take baths much longer. And they're like, for resale.
A shower.
I just walked one and they're like, for resale. I'm like, these houses are priced at 1.7. No first-time home buyers with young kids are coming in here. Don't worry about resale. Make it the way you want. Like,
yeah, it's all going to be tweens or older.
Yeah.
And they're going to want a shower.
Exactly.
And if they ever want to use a bath, then the master has a bath.
Yeah.
If they ever want to use a bath. But I still stand by one bathtub in one house, period.
In the ensuite or something like that. Yeah. But like, people are keeping their inserts and like, I have to have one. I'm like, get over it. Like,
and now they're trying to pass a law of getting rid of all the wood burning fireplaces.
Is that, that's, I don't know, that's going to go through.
No, it'll go through. It'll go through. But I would still, like the way I've done rental properties in certain municipalities that you're not allowed to, and you buy that extra cabinet and you buy a piece of stone and then you finish off the kitchen in the basement that's not supposed to have a stove and you sign off and close the permit and then you take out that cabinet, take out that stone and put a cooktop there.
Yeah.
I will do the exact same thing because I will always be a wood burning fireplace guy.
I got one and I can't get away from it, right? But I think they're going to start manufacturing, engineering them different where they're going to get around that somehow. They are. They you couldn't have the open face. Now you can only have the air tights, right? Like it's.
Yeah. Like I don't, I disagree with it. At that point, if it's your home, you can do whatever the fuck you want with it. Other, that's within legal limits. And I'm talking legal about not hurting anybody.
Yeah.
Forcing people to not use a wood burning fireplace in your home. That's a political agenda.
Yeah.
That's a different argument.
Well, we've had everything like in Orangeville, we had a petition go around for, wood oven pizza restaurant. People were complaining about having the wood oven.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I'm like, you got it's a woody, it's a wood oven pizza place. Like, it's a restaurant. Get over it. Like, oh, it's hurting the earth. I'm like, it's a restaurant. Like, you're okay driving to the city.
It's hurting
to go to work and then come back. And, you know, you stopped at 3 fast food restaurants for lunch, but that was okay, right? Like, I don't know, just kind of.
And these are people, what, they're EV drivers kind of thing? Or, like, what kind of people are there?
Yeah, I just saw a petition online. I was like,
I'm old enough to remember the 70s when we were killing the climate then. and we were melting the ice caps, and we were all supposed to be in, you know, water world.
Still
what
here.
Happened there?
Still here, eh?
Yeah, it's still, we're still here, right? So it's just like, and I know there's a new face, you know, Greta's not doing her bullshit anymore. So there's a bunch of crap. It's anything that's politically motivated, I don't agree with.
I'm the same way. I'm just like...
Especially when it comes to construction.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you have construction. You have guys that have never done it making... Either guys have never done it or making the laws, or someone dies to make a law. There's only two ways.
It's true.
Right? Let's call a spade a spade. That's what it is. It's kind of...
It's true.
Guys have never... You know, stepped on a job site. That's my biggest
gripe. Suits are designing what we are allowed to build or not build.
Well, I know. Yeah, it's just.
Ask the tradespeople what we should be building or not building.
Well, it's just changing codes and everything, right? Like, you know, I don't know the exact, like, the details of it, but stupid stuff like the new, like, 2-inch plumbing for washing machines, right?
Yeah, that came in a long time ago. That came in 10-inch. 10-inch.
But washing machines use less water than they ever did.
Yeah, they're more efficient, but the problem is it's the volume of water. And I'm like, yes and no. I agree with you. I also have a major argument about the amount of heads that you put in a shower and the volume of water that comes out there. That if you pass a certain amount, you have to change the P-trap to a 3-inch.
Yeah.
And I've proven that a 1.5 can still maintain that flow. Right? So it's like
you guys go around to a final few months back and turned down all the toilets to pass final. And I was told an extra half liter per toilet with 6 toilets in this house adds up at the end of the day, AJ. I'm like, you gotta be
kidding. What do you mean turned down? So what are you doing?
So the flushes, you know, you have the little adjustment.
Oh yeah, so you're reducing the tank volume.
Yeah. He made me go around, lift all
Okay, you know what happens with that? And I love this argument about the dual flush toilets that first came on the market.
Yeah.
The stupid thing is every single person that bought one was flushing twice on the single or flushing twice on the double.
Yeah.
So what plan are you saving at that point? Just get a proper toilet that flushes it once.
Yeah.
That's it. Like I'll always disagree with a dual flush toilet. I don't care what planet you're on.
I don't think the single flush works that well on the dual flush.
It doesn't. It doesn't serve anything.
Just adds water.
That's all you're doing, right? All you're doing is making the pee a little lighter color. That's all you're doing, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like, don't even buy these things. Don't even make, it doesn't make any sense at all. Just get a low flow toilet to handle what it needs to handle. Simple as that.
Yeah.
I did see recently American Standard, someone was showing off a dual flapper tank. It helps with moving the water faster in a circular, right? And I'm like, my two component machine, flapper and the actuator, just became a three component now.
Yeah.
So if the flapper ever goes, then I got to change two flappers now.
And plumber's like, licking his chops.
I don't get it. Like a toilet, it works properly if you do it properly. Like it just works. You have to have enough water in there, it works. And then if your system is set up properly, it works.
Yeah.
That's just that's a marketing gimmick right there, I think, is what it is.
You see a lot of that, though. Like,
but there's a lot of that, you know, the electrification bullshit, right? I can't stand any of that shit. My biggest problem is going to be the gas outdoor appliances.
Oh.
Your barbecue.
Yeah.
Everyone I know client-wise is always direct line, manifold. I want the gas line. I want 80,000 BTUs. I want a 1-inch Warflex going there, right? Because I don't want to deal with tanks anymore.
Yeah.
So you're going to force people to start building subdivisions where you're going to force everybody to go get propane tanks now to park them in your deck or your backyard so you can use a gas, because nobody's going to be taking an induction cooktop outside and cook your. We want a barbecue. Like, simple as that. I don't care about carcinogenics. I don't give a shit about any of that stuff. I want to eat meat, I'm going to eat it meat. If I want it well done, I want to eat it well done.
Yeah, well done.
Simple as that, right? But that politically motivated suit telling me how to build needs to get the hell out of the sandbox.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah, and you're going to have, like, even things like, okay, I have a Tesla. My wife has one. And, you know, I love it. I'm going to be 100% honest. Coming from a truck guy, like, driving it, it's fun to drive. I do get it. I get the whole stigma. I think it's, like, I find it like a convertible. Like, I never thought I'd drive a convertible. Then I got in a car with a buddy who has a convertible. I'm like, okay, I kind of get it, right? One of those things. But like in Bolton right now, we are doing a house and we have to actually apply for an EV charger because their grid system won't support.
You got to bump it up to 200.
But so many people in that subdivision have already bumped it up. And now the hydro company is saying you have to put an application in. And now the government's going to turn around and say they all have to be EV. Yeah, in Bolton.
What do you mean you have to put an application for what? To get the EV charger?
To be approved for the EV charger.
I thought it was just a requirement that you needed to bump up the 200 amp service.
You do, but then you have to apply and apply why you're bumping up to 200 amps.
To tell them that you're getting an EV?
EV charger. Because their grid right now in the older area of Bolton won't support it.
So will they support a standby generator then? Probably not.
I haven't dug into it. It's
a fuel source.
Yeah, I was just talking to a guy when we were out there doing drawings for a site, and he's like, hey, did you hear about this? And talk to the agent. So then I called the township. They're like, yeah, we're having problems with the hydro grid out here, so it has to be put on the application. I'm like, but isn't that an ESA thing? They're like, no, it has to be.
My gripe with EVs, right, and it's not gripe with Tesla particularly. I respect Elon for a bunch of things that he does. My gripe with EVs is the tree hugger's telling me that I'm destroying the planet with my internal combustion engine. Because until someone shows me the exact carbon footprint of an EV from conception and battery development and what those lithium ponds do, show me all that information and then compare it to internal, then we can have a conversation. But that's never shown. It's never been discussed.
Yeah, and you know what? We got ours, truthfully, not... Okay, my wife is a little more green than I am. So she says it's part factor that, you know, like I did get one to save the planet and save on gas and everything. But the minute it came out, she wanted one.
There was if no that's specs. That's the car you want.
That's,
you like
that's
it?
That's what it boiled down to, right?
But that's a choice. Now you've got a whole library of cars that you can choose, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to choose a Tesla, great. But if you want to choose Dodge Charger, great, whatever. I want to have options. I don't want to be told that I'm going to have to just eventually settle on an EV.
Yeah.
I'll never do that, right?
I don't even see how it's going to be feasible, truthfully. Like,
you're never going to hit the targets.
No, it's one of those like conversations where it comes up. I'm just like, it's so far-fetched. I'm like, I don't even see a point in wasting an argument over this because I'm like, I don't see it happening when they're projecting it to happen. It's not that soon. Like, you can't support it.
Like someone told me recently about an EV supercharge takes an hour and to get 80% on a Tesla, and it cost him $50 to do that.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm like, okay, fine. So technically speaking, he's half the price of what it would cost to fill mine up. Took me 5 minutes to fill mine up, and I was ready to rock and roll and go. Right? And now you guys are going, this is the latest from the suits, right? In the government. You guys are going to start now getting taxed on the weight of the vehicle.
Yep.
So because there's putting more stress on the infrastructure.
Yeah.
So now they want to tax you.
So you're paying more.
See, it's not really a saving money, I don't think. And it's definitely not a saving the planet thing.
See, even my wife says, and she's a sworn by, I want a Tesla kind of like advocate for it. And she says, if I had to work in the city, it wouldn't be feasible. She only works in Dufferin County. But she says, if I had to drive in the city.
Oh, drive back and forth.
Yeah, and I was driving around in the city. She goes like, okay, you get $450, $500 to I'd say tank. It's a charge, right? But she said, if I had to go to the city every day, I don't know if it'd be for me. But she only works in town, right? Like all our work is always in Dufferin County. So
yeah,
it's practical. And if we go on a long road trip, like 1 week, we went down to Niagara or something like that. Halfway down, we stopped, took the kids out for lunch, stopped at a supercharger, charged, and kept going on our way. Didn't inconvenience us there, right? But every day to the city,
it's the math. You're constantly driving and doing the math.
That, yeah.
You're constantly wondering, do we have enough to get to this point? Do we have enough to get to this point?
And like if we have to stop, how long are we going to stop? Or are there going to be stations available? And
you'll never see it in construction. That's why, I'm sorry. Andrew, if you're listening, he's the only one that I know that has a Ford Lightning. I was like, dude, you're the only person I know that has a Ford Lightning.
I almost bought one. I was at the dealership, and we have a tow-behind camping trailer. So I told the guy about it. He goes, you're lucky if you get 100 clicks out of it, towing the trailer.
The Lightning.
Yeah.
He mentioned that. He mentioned that to me on DMs. He was like going, it does drop dramatically. And I'm like, so you're never going to see it. And we still have yet to see the Cybertruck on a construction site.
I'm on the list. I would buy one.
Let me know when it, you know what? Don't talk to me in February.
You know what? If I were to get the Cybertruck, because I'm a GC, I'm not on the tools. I hate to say it, but it'd be more of a marketing gimmick.
Totally.
Wrap it.
Because it's going to get seen.
That's what it is. Right? It's not practical for a job site.
That shiny new thing is going to get really it's going to end quick.
But you take in the job site, how many times do you see guys leave the doors open for an hour or so trying to get tools in and out and everything? You have an electric vehicle, you get a little bit of ice built up in your door, go to shut your door, doesn't close properly, and then your battery drain, like, put it on the job site for 3 months.
Shoot at it.
No, but any electric truck, put it on the job site for 3 months between November to February, test it out, pulling a trailer, and then come talk to me. And then I'm good. Yeah. Then I will vouch with you.
I want to know that information.
Yeah. But I'm not talking about like, I want to see like a new construction builder's job site. Nails out there, this, that, like something like that.
I want to see. And I don't think as much as he's trying to create a foolproof product for the construction industry, I think it's going to fail. It's going to fail on all those little things that regular pickup trucks handle so well on a construction site.
Oh, you can't beat the regular pickup trucks. I'm more of a big truck kind of guy. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, like, I got Titan myself and like, I love it. I know it's not domestic, but
I don't think that the industry is going to change it. I don't think that you're going to start seeing any of that. You are only seeing some electric machinery, but that's more for internal mine applications. Right. So when they're taking care of like mine shafts or whatever, and they have to excavate, you can't use any internal combustion engines. So you have to use a battery one. But I'm also being told that they're like tethered. So as soon as I heard that, because I recently found that out, I was like, so this big crane excavator has got a big umbilical cord attached to a generator that's operating the power for it. But what if someone cuts that or slices or nicks it or something? Yeah. Because you are excavating inside this mine, right? And he goes, yeah, that's the one health risk that's associated with that. I was like, that's a major health risk, man. Yeah,
it's not a
like, I don't think this is like a sauna. You're not using 30 or 40 amps. I think you're using some serious amperage on this thing. And if someone slices that umbilical cord, that's death, right?
Yeah. I had one guy argue with me. Well, we were just having a conversation, and he's like, you don't think, you know, the electric trucks are going to make a way on the job sites? I'm like,
never.
I don't see it. I go, unless it's tested out, like I said, over the winter, harsh conditions, getting beat around, you know, rough mud, like even with the weight of them. Like, put those in the spring and try and drive up some of those driveways in the new builder site. The weight, they'll just get buried, right? It's like, well, no, electric's the way to go. Like, you know, now guys are 90% already on the tools, all battery. I'm like, that's what we're going to compare it to?
That's a different
battery tools to battery trucks.
You bring up that argument. Tell me where all the old batteries are going.
Yeah. Well, I know. Yeah.
All the old tool batteries. Where are they going?
Garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they safe there? Fuck no.
No.
So it's just like, guys, this is not a foolproof plan. Like, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, the way things are built, the way that they should be built is the way we're doing them.
Yeah.
Just leave it be like that. Right. So I don't mind. You should have the option. If you want to go buy an electric, you can go buy electric, go buy it. But don't
convince me to buy it. I think this switch should happen organically.
Yes.
As people slowly start to want to switch themselves, they should switch. I don't think there should be hard benchmarks or, you know.
But that's government.
It's
the speaker box bullshit. It's the next agenda. It's the next whatever. You know, vote me back in. Vote me in because I'm all about green. I'm all about this and all this other crap.
Yeah, I think organic change, I don't see any problem with that, but I think you can't force it.
You think Richard Branson's working on a fully electric airplane right now? Would you go on a fully electric airplane right now?
No.
So it's just like, this is just such bullshit, right? Yeah. I go back to the 70s. The world was ending then.
Yeah.
The world's been ending a long time. Long, long time, right?
Yeah.
You want to save the planet? Get rid of every human being. That saves
the planet. We're the ones destroying it.
We're the problem, okay?
Yeah.
Everybody else, every other species will totally take care of themselves and they'll replenish the planet really well. It'll look great, right? Get rid of us. It's as simple as that. But you can't because we're the apex, right?
Yeah.
This is always interesting when it goes down that road, man. But what else you want to share before I wrap it up? I got to do the 12 questions with you.
I think that's pretty much it, man. I just appreciate you having me on.
No, thanks for coming on the show, man. Yeah.
Jumping on show.
I like how you're doing your thing, right? I totally like how you're setting it all up, right? Which is a smart way to do it.
Yeah. No, I love being in studio and, you know, it's cool just coming in person for once. So
thanks, man.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful here.
It's too many Zoom calls. It's like, it's not the same vibe, right? That's the thing.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a different vibe. Right? Yeah.
I don't think Rogan's never done a Zoom.
I don't think he's ever done a Zoom.
It's always been in the studio, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure. A lot of guys I'm on calls with, they're all in the States, right? So it's kind of
Yeah,
it's kind of hard to.
Sometimes look how people come traveling or whatever and they want to come in.
Like yeah.
We just had Aaron here from Big Dog Construction, and he was coming in for a symposium that's happening. And he flew in from New Brunswick to here right off the plane, came right to the studio.
Sweet.
Dropping that show this week, which is great. So
it's awesome.
It was a good conversation about sustainability, but. AJAC Custom, ACCustom.ca. Reach them out on IG at AC Custom Rental Inc.
Yeah.
What's your favorite construction word?
The F bomb. I'm gonna be honest. Yeah.
Least favorite tool.
Least favorite tool. Rotary hammer.
Speaking of which. Why is it that all Teslas, when they back up, make that noise?
I honestly don't
what
know
is
the
that
real
noise.
I don't know the real answer. I heard it's for safety because they're so quiet.
So they have to make that noise?
It sounds like an RC car or spaceship.
An internal combustion engine slowing down, like back slowing, it doesn't make that much of a noise.
I heard it's for safety. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's like the gears and the electric motor going backwards.
Like, why don't you just like. Put Ludacris's song on or something like that, right? I don't understand that. That noise is just annoying, right?
Yeah.
What construction sound do you love?
Impact driver when my guy catches a stud. When he doesn't miss a stud.
It's nice. Favorite beverage?
Right now, water.
Yeah. What is with the 70? I haven't tried it. What is like? Is it just water fasting or?
It's water, 2 workouts a day. Progress pick.
No food?
No, you had to stick to a diet. Yeah, the 2
high
workouts.
In protein?
You can pick any diet you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just workouts. Water, no alcohol?
Yeah.
No and juices, then, no coffee?
Some people throw in their coffee and their juices, right? It's supposed to be like no sugary drinks.
I'm ideally. Totally off, Joe. I haven't touched juice in forever, right?
Yeah. It's that 2 workouts, 1 indoor, 1 outdoor. Yeah, just kind of a...
Nice. Andy, he's doing a good thing. Always liked him.
Yeah.
What turns you on and off in construction?
Turns me on is when I see, honestly, guys that are motivated to be there. I hate that. Like, and what, so I guess that kind of works off each other where it's like when guys come to work and they want to be there, makes you feel good. When those guys come in, they're dragging their heels. It's like, I just,
yeah, I know.
You know, you like, just, I hate that feeling. Just,
it's a different, it's an infection at that point.
Yeah.
Virus. Favorite curse word.
F-bomb.
Favorite vehicle in the entire world, any mode of transportation?
Ooh. Pretty much any pickup truck, man. Any
really?
I'm a pickup truck guy. I love just a simple half-ton pickup truck. Just I'm not fancy dancing. Right? I love my Titan.
The Titan, eh?
Yeah.
Nice. What do you miss from your childhood?
Not much. I'm gonna be honest. Childhood was just a childhood. That's it. Like very simple.
Is it?
Yeah.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
Full blown consultant. I'm gonna be honest. I would love to jump in and help guys out and like as a full time gig, kind of like.
Yeah. You're already on the way. No.
Yeah. Ideally, but yeah. We're aiming for that.
What profession would you not like to do?
I'd say like an office, cold calling, sales kind of cubicle job. I don't know if I could do that.
Nope,
man.
Like not interested. Not interested. Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Crawling, not walking, eh? That's my goal in life. Just like crawl out of life, not walk. Like.
I like that, AJ. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, that was great.
Been a blast talking to you, man. All the best to you.
Yep.
I'm sure we'll get you back on the show eventually.
Sounds good, man.
Talk some more stuff. So
yeah, chop it up.
That's it. We're out of here, Angelina.